Welcome back to My Seminary Life. I'm your host, Brandon Knight, and today is the four-year anniversary special. Can you believe it, folks? It's been 4 years. Well, 4 years and 2 months, because the actual fourth anniversary of the show was back in March, but we're here today for the fourth anniversary special. I don't know for you all, the listener, but for me, as the guy recording this, 4 years is kind of a weird one to think about. Like, can you believe that you've been listening to this for 4 years? Well, of course, some of you, you know, maybe you've been only listening fairly recently, but just to think, like, it's been 4 years already that you've been listening and I've been recording this. It's one of those for me where I'm like, I think about it and I'm like, 4 years, that just can't be right. That can't be right. That seems like it should be like much smaller of a number. Like, it's only been 2 years. The show's only been around for 2 years or something. But at the same time, I think back to like when I first started this show and I'm talking into my phone on Anchor, like, to record the episodes, talking about my first weeks in seminary, and then just like how much has changed in the past 4 years. I mean, since that point, I got connected with all my usual all the regular guests here on My Seminary Life, you know, Joshua Knoll, Will Rose, Joe Day, those three in particular, TJ Blackwell, like those guys in particular, got connected with them, started Systematic Geekology, launched the Anazao Ministries podcast network. I graduated seminary. Like, the whole point of me actually going back to seminary, fun fact, I don't know if you knew this, I went to seminary to get a master's degree, not to have a podcast. I don't know if I've ever made that clear, that I didn't go to seminary to start a podcast. There's much cheaper ways to start a podcast. Starting a podcast is actually really easy and very, and can be very inexpensive. But when you're coupling it with thousands of dollars to go to seminary, it suddenly becomes a very expensive investment, especially when you're labeling it a quote hobby. But just to, like, you know, think back, like, 4 years ago, that's 2021, you know, COVID was so much more present at the time, you know, like, it was still like very much a thought on our minds, where now it's shocking to think that like 2020 was 5 years ago now, right? Like, it's, and COVID-19, like, it's still around, but it's so much of an afterthought, right? Or even just like personal stuff, you know, I graduated, we had a kid, we very recently moved, I quit my job and started a new one, I was an intern for a church for a little bit, like, I've been doing this preaching residency stuff very recently, like, just to think about, like, all, I started a second show, just to think, like, all the stuff that has happened, suddenly now 4 years is like, wow, that was like a lifetime ago now. It's weird. Strange, the passage of time. Like, it's just kind of weird to think, like, on the one hand, no, it can't be that many years already. Like, I've only been doing this a couple years. Like, but at the same time, it's like, wow, so much has changed in the past 4 years that, it's just like, wow, maybe 4 years isn't enough. Maybe I'm actually supposed to be on, like, I'm on 4 years, but internally I feel more like seven. Like, it's been 7 years of doing this show internally. The wear and tear on my body has been more like 8 years rather than four. But keeping in this spirit of, like, reflecting back over how much has changed over the past 4 years, you know, one thing that I do say here on the show often is I reserve the right to change my mind later, right? Like, this is a thing that I do where I that's part of how this show works. I consider myself the eternal student. I am always learning and growing, and like to read and be in classroom environments and all that good stuff. So, you know, and part of learning and growing is admitting at times where you, you know, where your perspective has changed, where you have had growth intellectually, spiritually, emotionally, whatever the case may be, and you have changed on the back end of this. And, you know, that's kind of the weird thing about having a show that's kind of like a little bit of like a theological, philosophical journal kind of thing. At least that's how other people have described the show before. I didn't know what to consider the show when I first started it. So, you know, whatever. If it's a journal podcast, then fine. It's a journaling podcast. Anyway, so the, you know, I just kind of keeping in this mind of I'm a student, that means that even though there is a well-documented 4 years worth of episodes of times where I've said, this is what I do think, this is what I do believe, this is what I am inclined towards, there are times where I'm going to go back and say, well, you know, my mind has changed a little bit here. And that's what I want to do here in today's episode. I want, as we celebrate the 4th anniversary of the show, I want to take a moment to talk about one thing in particular that, as time has gone on, in the early days of the show, I was very staunchly against this. But now my opinion on this topic has softened a bit. And so let's talk about denominations. That's what we're going to talk about here today, because I reserve the right to change my mind later. And I've changed my mind a little bit when it comes to denominations. You see, when I first started this show, I was very anti-denomination. It's not from like a, you know, want to be like this teenage rebel without a cause, stick it to the man kind of thing. I had these many experiences growing up and within my pulpit supply ministry as well, of just seeing denominations fail the churches that are a part of the denomination. I just saw them fail those churches time and time again, just like dropping the ball so often and helping them with growth, helping them with health, helping them with pastor search stuff, the whole bit. And I just through high school, through college, through the like early days of my preaching ministry, like I just had a very staunchly anti-denominational view. I remember saying, and I'm pretty sure if you go back and listen to the earlier episodes, you will hear me say how the existence of denominations are a physical reminder of the results of the fall, because it shows how easily we have divided over the years. And I do think there is some truth still to that statement. We do have a lot of denominations. We have a lot of theological, philosophical, and ethical perspectives and camps and isms and ists that you can be a part of. I just very recently had a whole long rant about labels. So, you know, just go 2 episodes back and you can hear me rant about labels for a bit. This is going to be a much softer approach, though, to this subject, which is funny seeing how there's like a gap in between these 2 episodes. You know, I'm not necessarily backtracking from that episode. Don't get me wrong. I'm speaking very specifically here of denominations. So I just had this very anti-denomination. I don't like these things. I don't want to be a part. You know, I don't want to be defined by whatever church's denomination I go to. And that did include the fact that at the time I was at a non-denominational church. I did not go to a non-denominational church as my way of saying, screw you, denominations. That wasn't the thing at all. I understand what the term non-denominational means. It means Baptist. That's what non-denominational means. It means a Baptist church that's a little bit more modern in its approach. We'll have to see if in 4 more years I change my mind about this next statement. But, you know, having been a part of a non-denominational church for several years, and very recently within the past year or two starting to transition out and going different directions with my Sunday morning church experiences, my perspective of the non-denominational church now is that it is the McDonald's of churches. It's convenient. It's there. It's readily available. It has all. It's your one-stop shop. It's a Walmart. It's your one-stop shop for all your conservative Christian needs. Like it's got everything that you need. Like that's my perspective of a non-denominational church anymore. And like I said, I reserve the right to change my mind later. So who knows, in 4 years I might be saying, well, you know, non-denominational churches have this, that, and the other thing. As of right now, I don't see myself doing that, but you never know. Here I am talking about denominations in a positive way now. So like I said, I started this show out with that whole mentality of like denominations are just bad. I know some people kind of get into this like anti-denominational, like it's just all so man-made. And I think that there was a little bit of that in there for me. You know, you'll find people maybe more of like the house church variety who are like, you know, this is the way to do church and all you denominational people are doing it, you know, against God's will. Like that wasn't anything a part of me. A lot of my perspective, my anti-denominational perspective in the early days of this show came back to seeing, like I said, time and time again, when denominations did not show up for their congregations, where they just let them flounder, let the church die, and just kind of just all these, you know, several instances growing up and as a Pulpit Supply minister, just seeing these times where like they just let them down. They just let them die when they didn't have to. You could even feel the bite a little bit there in that last statement, but I promise to be softer in this episode. So, but I don't really have that perspective anymore. I do still think that there are times where all of these, like I said, denominations, camps, isms, is theological perspectives, philosophies, ethics, all of these things, like all of these things are truly just a reminder of like the division that we have. But at the same time, this is another thing that has changed, that like division doesn't necessarily mean bad all of the time, because there are instances within all of this, and you know, this can become a very nuanced conversation, but I'm trying to keep it like a little bit more high level here. There's this times where there is division, but it's more of like a church culture thing. I don't want to make it sound like a race culture thing, but like a church culture thing. And like when we kind of step back a little bit and just kind of observe higher level, because one church does it this way, one group does it this way, and another group does it this way, and you know, maybe scripture is a little bit more ambiguous. Church fathers and mothers have been, you know, on both sides. You know, you'll find people supporting both, whatever the case may be. Communion might be a good example of that. Like how we administer communion, how we do communion, that might be a good example if you need like a little bit of, you know, like legs to this kind of conversation. Or baptism, even like the how we do baptism part. The, you know, we have all these different perspectives and whatnot, the ways to do things. And yeah, we have divided over these things, but at the same time, it's kind of like then it becomes like this tapestry of different ways that people are seeking to worship God in the way that they know best how, in the way that is most true and honest to what they think scripture is saying. And again, if you get nuanced, that last statement of like worshiping God in the, you know, truest, honest way to scripture that they think is possible, that can take you down a road of people who are actually teaching heresy, living out heresy, whatever the case may be. You could take these, anything I say, and rip it out of context and ruin it, just so you know. Just try. You can. It won't be that hard. But the point here is that even my perspective of like, oh, this is just a reminder of all of our divisions in the church. Like, I think that is one thing that over, even like within the past year and a half, 2 years, as I've been sitting with a lot of my church, unresolved church hurt, of just seeing like, yes, there are times where we make bigger deals out of these things than we should. But, you know, if we kind of just take a step back and see just like the variety of ways that we are all trying to worship God with integrity, maybe that's the right word that I could use there. Like it actually becomes like this great melting pot. And I don't think that's a bad thing. And it's funny how doing the pulpit supply ministry, even though I was in these churches where there were times where the denomination was absolutely letting them down, it allowed me to see a wider variety of churches, which helped me to see, again, this like beautiful division, the beauty of division at times that can exist where there's different ways that we are trying to do these things. I think also the fact of like working with Josh and TJ with Whole Church and hearing people, you know, being brought to the table to share these different perspectives. And honestly, also like talking to Pastor Will, and not just like from the perspective of like getting the Lutheran take on it, but getting the perspective of somebody who doesn't minister in my area. One thing that I have come to realize in all of this like anti-denominational mindset that I had early on in the during this show came from the fact that it appears that in my area we do not do denominations well. Yeah, as someone who has predominantly spent the majority of their life in one place, Northwest Indiana, it would appear that a lot of our issues with denominations and why I had such a strong anti-denominational viewpoint early on is because a lot of denominations around here have failed their churches. And in other areas, that is not a universal truth. I was taking what I perceived was a holistic issue that actually, like, there's probably other places in the U.S. where, you know, denominations are absolutely failing their congregations, that doesn't mean that, like, universally across the board, all denominations are always failing their churches. The other thing I've come to realize is that specifically it would appear in this area that Baptist churches are Baptist denominations are failing their churches. And I grew up in a lot of Baptist churches. I have preached in a lot of Baptist churches. So again, I think just my perspective on all of this was distorted because of my real lived experiences. Like, I'm not going to downplay the part of like the Baptist denominations have oftentimes failed their churches in my community. However, that doesn't mean that all of them are. And obviously, depending on where you land, again, we could seep this a little bit further down into the whole nuancing things, because depending on who you are, you know, maybe you would say the United Methodist Church is failing their churches and that's why there was a split, or the Episcopalian, or who else had they haven't split yet, but you know, you could probably also say the same thing about the SBC. Like we could take this several different directions, but I would say just as a simple starting point for me was coming to realize that like, oh, this isn't necessarily like as widespread as I thought it would be. Actually, as I have gotten to know people who minister in Methodist congregations, in Lutheran congregations, getting more familiar with the Anglican world, like, I've come to realize that, again, a lot of my complaints about how the denominations were failing their churches was how Baptist denominations in this area were failing their churches. The other groups that I just named off, they have safeguards in place to make sure, you know, and they can fail their churches. I'm not trying to say others are absolutely perfect. Again, none of this is going to be perfect. We're all running this and we're all sinners, so we're going to mess this up at times. But a lot of my complaints are actually, there are safeguards in place in other groups. And a lot of this comes down to, if I could speak again, just very broadly, the fact that in the more liturgical church world, there is a hierarchy, which I know is a word that some of us really don't like, especially in the church world, but there is a hierarchy, and that hierarchy is there to not just lord authority over people, but to help their churches, to, you know, provide stability and guidance and wisdom when issues come, when things happen. Where in the independent church world, the non-denominational church world, the Baptist church world, even, you know, where there's a little bit more praise towards autonomy, towards, you know, you are your own thing, even within like the SBC, like you're part of a thing, but still fairly like autonomous and independent within it. Like there, in my experience, it seems like removing those like hierarchical guardrails is damaging. That can cause a lot of additional damage to the already existing issues at hand. Whereas a lot of my complaints seem to be addressed within other groups. I'll give you one very recently, even. Like this conversation happened, and it was kind of like the moment in my mind where I was like, okay, yeah, I absolutely need to talk about this in the 4-year anniversary special. Because very recently on the Whole Church podcast, I did an appearance over there. They were doing a job fair series where they were bringing in people who have jobs that aren't like within church ministry. So I got to talk about being a ninja coach for however long the episode went. And part of the discussion was, you know, as somebody who, the question was broadly presented to all of these guests of like, as someone who is not working in the church ministry world, what is something that you wish churches or seminaries would actually do to better minister to their congregations? And Josh really leaned into this question with me because of, insert all of my background that you're all very familiar with because you listen to the show. And I talked about how I think that seminary students, especially those going into pastoral ministry, they should be required to take an ethics examination, which would mean that they need to take several courses on ethics, not to be able to wax philosophically over them, over different perspectives, but to understand that, hey, when you do bad things, there are consequences for those bad things. And that in a situation where you are voted out of a church or there's an issue of misconduct kind of a thing, you should have your ethics card, your ethics certification will become null and void, and you cannot minister again until you have repassed those classes and retaken the and passed the examination. Like, I, again, it's not foolproof, obviously, but I really do think that something like that would actually be helpful. It's better than the nothing that we are doing right now in a lot of seminaries. It's better than, you know, my ethics professor was arrested for intimidation. Like, for business intimidation. Like it's better than what we're, the general lack of nothing that we are doing currently. So why don't we actually do something about this? When you become a lawyer, you have to take an ethics examination. Depending on where you do counseling, the state may require you to take an ethics examination. doctors have to take the Hippocratic Oath. I don't see why it's so unrealistic or too demanding to say that pastors should have to go through the same kind of process. And for everybody who's saying, well, what about grace? What about forgiveness? What about mercy? That is the kind of attitude that protects people who are monsters. Those are the kinds of comments that cheapen grace, grace that should be given out. You're cheapening it by giving it to, by protecting people who are hurting people intentionally. And so that was my big thing. And Josh was like, oh yeah, that's yep, that makes sense. Lo and behold, like a day or two after the episode came out, Pastor Will sent us a picture of his ethics card. This is like a, there's like a club membership card, like if you went to Sam's Club or Costco, that says this guy can be a Lutheran minister in the ELCA, and if there's some issue of misconduct, he could have that license revoked, and then he cannot minister within the ELCA anymore. So I guess, you know, in the darkest timeline world where that would happen, Will, I guess, could become, I don't even know. Will is a Lutheran. I don't know what else he would convert to. Methodist. We'll just pick the wild card. He, you know, I guess he could go the Methodist route, but like within their, within that denomination, they do have that kind of requirement. Here I thought maybe I was presenting something that was like new and innovative. Lo and behold, no, this group has it. And chances are if that group has it, other groups are going to have it as well. I just think that within this one group, this group that more so celebrates autonomy and independence within their denomination or within their church, in my personal experience, that seems to be a recipe for disaster. You're setting yourself up for failure. Again, every denomination is going to fail their church at some point. Their churches at some point. There are bad people who are in ministry, but that is something that I don't know how to remedy other than to keep pitching ideas that apparently already exist. But, you know, this is, as I tried to like pivot this show a little bit into more of like a next steps kind of thing. Like, I guess I could just take it all the way back to like the, I'm not so much anti-denominational anymore. And I think getting to that point has helped me, again, to see the beauty and the diversity in the, that to realize that within denominations, there is a culture. And, you know, sometimes not everything in a culture is necessarily healthy, but sometimes just exposing yourself to another church culture can help you, can be a way that you can experience a more well-rounded way to worship God. Like, I think there have been times where we have divided over issues that are, you know, more so trimmings rather than the root of the problem. And the root issues, more so decorations that we're dividing over. But the, I think sometimes when we actually like sit back and we're willing to just be exposed to some of this stuff, we can begin to realize that like, oh, we're just all worshiping God in different ways, and that's okay. Like there is beauty in the creativity and the diversity of how we worship God at times. There's the asterisk. So I just think like, and to be willing to, you know, I kind of got into this by accident, you know, being exposed to it by doing the Pulpit Supply stuff, like just to kind of be exposed to different things and through it all to be able to see just like the beauty and the different ways that we worship God and to be more, that has really opened my perspective to being willing to, you know, read and study and be in dialogues with people of different denominations. Denominations that, you know, growing up the way that I did, I was told they don't really love God. They have all these other things. So all that to say is I do reserve the right to change my mind. So who knows, in another 4 years, I might come back and say, never mind, I hate denominations. I will say, you know, again, I do see the irony in all of this that, like, you know, very recently I did this episode talking about labels and just how burnt out I am by it. And you know what? There are still these moments. There's been a lot of healing over the past 2 years. But there are still these moments where I'm just like, I really don't like going to church, or I don't like being around other Christians. It's getting better for sure. And to sit and do an episode to talk for 30 minutes about this is kind of part of my cathartic, it's a little bit cathartic for me of just kind of like, I am going to make myself celebrate what is actually worth celebrating. Because I think that's also part of the issue in our culture nowadays, whether it's pop culture or church culture, is like, if something is bad, we just throw, if any little bit of it is bad, we throw all of it out. Like, you're supposed to, you know, whether it's a hot take or, you know, you're the anti-establishment person, to celebrate any little thing, I will tell you, I will look you in the eye and say that I am a person who the system failed. I should be a pastor in a church right now. I should be a youth pastor, an associate pastor, a whatever at this point in time. Maybe a preaching pastor at a larger non-denominational church, a campus pastor even. Like, I should be somewhere right now. I should be. The system failed me. Even though I jumped through all the hoops the system threw at me, came out landing on the top. But when it all comes down, you know, it all comes down to this. Do justly, love mercy, walk humbly with your God. And for those of you who caught all of those references, and I'm not talking about the Micah 6:8 part, the whole reference, if you knew the whole reference, good for you. Because when it all comes down, you know it all comes down to the walk. How are you walking? How are you living your life? And for me, it's been a difficult past couple of years to heal from just my burnt outness, my anger towards the system. But I will also look you in the eye and say, but this system over here, they are trying to present solutions to a lot of the issues. And I think that is worth celebrating. I think that is worth highlighting. So do that. You know, if something has truly, truly ruined you, don't force yourself to, like, celebrate something. If you've been, like, you know, if you've been traumatized by something beyond all reason, you do not have to try and celebrate that. But if you're more in a situation like me where it has hurt, but you can still see the little bit of good that is there, or maybe you could see how some people over in the periphery are trying to fix it or trying to be alternatives, celebrate those. Happy 4 years, everybody. Thanks for listening to another episode of my seminary life. 4 years mostly strong. There were some gaps in there along the way, but 4 years mostly strong. Thank you for listening. If you haven't yet already, I don't know why you haven't done this yet, because the show's been around for 4 years, but you should rate and review the show by this point and pass this episode along to a friend. Maybe that friend who is absolutely anti-denominational, and see maybe if this helps them think a little bit differently on the back end of it. You don't have to change your mind, person who was forced to listen to this episode by your friend, quote friend, who sent this to you. You don't have to change your mind completely. And you don't usually say this at the end of a rant, of a discussion, but just hear me out on all of it. Just hear me out a little bit. Rate and review the show. Pass the episode along to a friend. Make sure you check out all the other great I don't edit the show. Check out all the other great shows here on the NSL Ministries Podcast Network, including Be Living Water, The Whole Church Podcast, Systematic Geekology, and of course my sister show, Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I have been in, like, full gear Karate Kid mode for, like, the past few weeks. So if you're, like, still really hyped about all things Karate Kid Legends and you just want to like nom 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 chew up some more Karate Kid stuff, there's been episodes upon episodes recently to go back and listen to. And check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, A Place for Faith and Pop Culture. We'll see you all in the next episode, which is the 200th episode of the show. We're going to go back to back on big milestone episodes. Why not? Thank you all for listening. This has been I'm Brandon Knight signing off, reminding you as always, I'm mixing how I end the shows all of a sudden. Reminding you as always that theology is for everyone, and for 4 years strong now, I will continue to remind you to keep on studying.